Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Well, hello, everybody. This is John Young for Tracking Connections podcast. And today I'm solo with my dear friend, Dr. Bill Sutherland, who lives in the Toronto area, spent an enormous amount of time studying martial arts and healing. He's a healer in many ways. And Bill and I talk regularly about our interest in the phenomenology of deep connection. And he spent some considerable time with the San Bushman healers, and he has a practitioner of Seiki Jitsu, and he works a lot with indigenous people in his own region, but he's also a medical doctor and has a practice. So Bill is a person who walks in two worlds and has a brilliant mind. And besides, he's a lot of fun to know. And so Bill, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, John, in this moment, I guess first and foremost, I'm here as your friend, which is something I have great fondness and gratitude for. And I love the fact that, this recording that we're doing right now comes out of our regular conversation that we have each week. And I appreciate, the longevity and all of the creativity that's come out of those calls over the years. I am married for 31 years, a father of four. A physician. I'm a general family physician by training. Done a lot of different things over the years in terms of hospital medicine and emergency medicine. But for the last 7 or so years, I've had a primary mental health care practice specifically. And then I would say that in terms of my life track, my whole interest and pull over time has been to sort of understand healing in a broad notion. What that means cross-culturally, what that means essentially, what that means in the world and in our lives. And so that's taken me to many different places in both the orthodox and the alternative. And as you were saying, I've spent a lot of time with Indigenous and traditional people in different cultures around the world. And in truth, the decision to go into medicine actually came out of traditional ceremony and the support of the elders. So that's always the kind of question that's I'm holding most days, is every day, really, I think, given my profession and what I do. But what is the nature of health? What is the nature of healing? What is that mystery that animates life and holds us in those relationships? That's a question that I never tire of.
Mm, that's wonderful. And the reason we decided to do this podcast was that, one, it's summertime, and Aiden and Sarah and I all have different travel schedules right now. And we decided that, well, if I'm in a conversation and it feels like a good moment to capture a podcast, well, I should just go for it. And I said, okay, it's funny not to be here with Sarah and Aiden, but ironically, you went to a baseball game with my son Aiden when he was trying to tour all the professional baseball stadiums, which I learned recently in a conversation with you. So you've met Aiden.
That's right. Yeah. A few years going back now.
Yeah, yeah. But I was thinking about, the fact that in the Living Connection First Village here in July of 2024, our theme of the month, sort of an online membership for people who are really interested in this topic and want to go deeper, that is, connection to nature, self, and other people. We sometimes do something like an invitational challenge. Hey, why don't we all, including me and Sarah and Nate and everybody in the village, why don't we all practice the same thing and talk about it in our live online gatherings, right? And this month just happens to be the month of learning how to fox walk, which is, it's a kind of a conscious way of walking. And as Nate Summers, who's a Bakwa practitioner, points out, there's great similarities between this idea of fox walking and walking the circle in Bakwa. And then when I was visiting with the San Bushman, I was really curious if they fox walk, and this is something that I learned as a boy from my mentor, Tom Brown, a way of moving where you're gliding and you're keeping your center of gravity between your head, your shoulders, and your hips, and your feet are kind of going out, touching the ground, laying flat, and then you shift your weight over your foot. And then you told me about gravity. And your explanation of it was like, okay, we have to capture this because this is a coincidence not to be ignored. I would say a synchronicity. So would you mind explaining a little bit about why gravity? What's gravity about in respect to walking? Because I thought that was very interesting.
Well, I'll answer the question, but I think I'd like to give a little bit of maybe a little more preamble in and around it. I mean, the one thing to realize, to start with the notion of walking to begin with, is that walking we forget because we become so skilled at it. It becomes so habitual, and we become so stable in our walking. We forget that walking really is an act of instability, right? Walking really is an act of controlled falling. We have to have locomotion, to have movement across a distance, we have to continually try to shift the center of mass, our own center of gravity. We have to move it such that we, in essence, start to fall. And of course, as we go through the gate, we catch that fall in each step. But really, the act of walking, the act of running, is an act of controlled falling across the landscape. And that's how we move. And of course, we know this is true. If you ever look at infants when they're trying to learn how to walk, and we see our children as they make those first attempts to first sort of stand and stabilize, you realize that they're trying to find their center of gravity in relation to the gravity of the planet. And then they start those sort of initial hesitant steps, right? We'll take one or two steps and fall, or one or two steps and fall into mom or dad's arms. And then with practice, they become more competent, that the one step becomes the two steps, the four steps, you know, across the room. And of course, in those early moments, those early days, it looks like, they're narrowly averting catastrophe with every step, because we can really see the truth of that they are in, sort of this perpetual fall that they're learning to catch themselves from. And so, our relationship with movement and gravity is, you can't, they're coupled, they can't be uncoupled. But there's a couple of thoughts that I think are really, that I want to sort of bring around that. So Josh Schrey of the Emerald Podcast, in one of his episodes, was talking about how his son was learning to stand and to walk. And he realized, what is he orienting himself to? Well, it's literally to the earth itself. It's literally to the center of the earth, right? Because, we are like a spoke of a wheel as we stand to this massive planet that we live on. But we're literally oriented to the very center of the earth, our axis, the axis of our body to that gravity, so that we can be in right relation and stability. And then he put out something that was really quite amazing. He said, well, but then you think the earth itself is orienting to a center of gravity, which is the sun, the very center of the sun. The earth is in an axial relationship to the very center of the sun. And that very center of the sun is in an axial relationship to the very center of the galaxy, a massive black hole at the center of the galaxy. And that galaxy is in an axial relationship to some greater mystery in the universe itself. And so then you think about every time that we stand, we are in these kind of layered relations of gravity, literally through the earth to the sun, to the center of the galaxy, to the center of the universe. And that's a really remarkable kind of orientation that we never really understand in the depth of it, because it's just the mundane activity of standing, of being upright, of keeping a posture. So I think that that's a phenomenal kind of everyday mystery that we're negotiating and navigating. So yeah. Often in my healing work, I've been asking myself, what is this relationship to gravity? Because a big element of healing to me is movement. What is the nature of movement? What is the nature of motion? And those could be very different levels. The nature of cellular motility, of organ motility. How do we, the parts inside of us organically move? So that's a facet. And what is that as an expression of health? And how can I move this body through space, my limbs, my core, my torso? How does that motion take place? And how do I have locomotion? How do I move in a fluid way, like you were talking about, fox walking across the landscape? And is there a way that is, that we can move in a kind of rightness? And that may look like a type of efficiency, say, for example, or it may be task oriented if we're tracking or stalking or something along that line. But also, what makes a beautiful movement? What makes movements artistically? What are movements, evolutionarily speaking, in terms of, how does a starfish move? How does a sea anemone move? What about these sort of fluid, organic, asymmetrical movements that we see in nature? And does that still live in us, in our present form from an evolutionary sense? So I the notion of motion to me is always wrapped up with the notion of gravity, right? How are we navigating this perpetual reality? And then I always love that gravity is kind of at least as long as we're terrestrial bound. But even in space, there's still the effects of gravity. Like it's something that never gives up on us, right? It's the unchanging. It's always there. And it's always shaping us. And it's what shaped our very forms. It shapes the forms of all things. And we just have to look at a tree. And that form of that tree is a form of its relationship to gravity and to other things, you know, obviously to the light, to the sun, you know, and you can see that the form that it takes has been shaped by these forces. And then there was one story that I thought that's been on my mind. And it was a story of a founder of a Japanese movement tradition. And the movement tradition is called Noguchi Taiso. And Noguchi was the founder's name. And as a young man, he was actually in Hiroshima when it was bombed. And he saw the horror and the terror and the destruction of that bombing. He survived it. But it shattered him existentially, because in the midst of being witness to that first power, you know, that first unfolding of that energy, of that destruction, of that horror, he lost faith that there was nothing that he could trust in the world, that there was nothing he could trust in reality, there was nothing he could trust in existence. And he went through a kind of life as a specter or shadow for a number of years in depression, feeling that there was nothing that he could anchor to. And then one day he realized that he was anchored. He was literally anchored to the earth in his relation to something called gravity. And then he said, oh, I can trust this. It's always here. It's shaping me. And he developed a movement tradition called Noguchi Taiso, and Taiso just meaning exercise. But it was, again, this very organic, rhythmic, asymmetrical way of moving that allowed one to explore how do we move in relationship with and through gravity. So I've been thinking about these things for a long time. And one of the healing traditions that I've been a part of is a healing tradition called Seikijutsu. It's a near extinct Japanese healing tradition. And Seiki has three elements. One is this sort of notion of a transmission. Seiki means the art of the vital life force, or the vital life energy, or the vital animating energy of life. And it's an exploration of that. And so Seiki has assessed three aspects. So one is this notion of a transmission, of kind of transmitting or waking up or reviving or planting. I mean, there's many, many metaphors you can use, but this sort of primal life animating force, and how do we then, once it's woken, start to come into alignment with it? And that brings up the second aspect of it, which is called Seiki Taiso, which is a set of movements, improvised, spontaneous, done on a bench, a stool, where we start to let that vital life force express ourselves through the body. And the third element is what they call Seiki Ryoho, which is more a treatment, like you would think in a traditional type of alternative medicine sense, of working with the body, primarily to soften it such that it can receive and work with Seiki, but also secondarily, and, you know, people get well, get better, you know, in sort of receiving these treatments. So that we spend this time, you know, doing these movements on the bench. And I think to the Western mind, when they hear something like Seiki, they tend to focus on the notion of energy. I mean, it has the word ki inside of it, or chi. You know, they think about an energetic experience. And I think often in the world of alternative healing, there's this incredible, you know, like this sort of broad focus on this notion of this vitality or electricity or energy. And I think it's a metaphor that's fraught with a lot of difficulties, but it tends to be where the Western mind goes and where it tends to look for something. But I started to realize in my Seiki work, again, just sort of independently, what about this relationship to gravity? You know, what is my relationship to gravity in this movement, in this healing? What does that feel like? So as I sit on the bench and move back and forth, so if you imagine, you know, I'm on a stool and I'm swaying, finding a natural kind of sway and swagger and rhythm, a natural breath, natural gestures and articulation of touch. But again, looking for a movement. And the movement that I'm looking for ultimately isn't my movement. It's not a purposeful movement. It's not an intentful movement. It's a sense of being moved. You know, is there a greater sense that there is a force that is moving me? You know, that's sort of what I'm orienting to in the midst of this Seiki work. And as I was saying to you in our conversation the other day, I was teaching a workshop, and I was saying to everybody, I was wanting to orient them to the sense of how gravity can support and accentuate and bring forth the movement. And so I had everybody get up and start walking. And just like I said to you, that fall, like walking is controlled falling. And then I said, let's just start to accentuate the falling, like almost like a swan dive. Can we fall, and or a game of chicken? How far can we fall walking before we have to catch ourselves? And then, of course, it becomes like a Monty Python sketch, like the Ministry of Silly Walks, where all of a sudden everybody's walking in a very drunken like way. And that makes sense because, you know, under the effects of inebriation of alcohol, we lose that motor control. And so the notion of the fall, you know, if you've ever seen someone in a drunken stagger, you see, oh, it really is a kind of fall. And of course, the control is just coming late. And so I had the participants kind of going around and just they ended up looking like a drunk kind of walk. Of course, in the martial arts, we have the notion of like drunken monkey kung fu, and you can see all these kind of, again, movements that are about using gravity to move and interact with the opponent, right? And creating, again, the nature of a block or something or an attack is really, again, just it becomes a controlled fall, right, in that expression. And so that was that. And so we just I was trying to hook up the people to that, you know, please, you know, be aware of this thing called gravity. Be aware of how it is an access, how it aligns us. And the last aspect is after I taught that workshop, which was just last Sunday or a week ago this past Sunday, I had a friend call yesterday and said, Bill, I had a dream of you last night. He said, in the dream, you were teaching a Seiki class and I was in there being supportive of, in some role, but you were teaching people how to walk. And I said, that's a really interesting synchronicity. You know, just a week ago, I was doing a Seiki workshop and that was the first time I'd ever done that. I'd never had people do this sort of drunken walk. It was just a spontaneous exercise to help bring forth a point that I'd seen in a living way in that moment. And so to my friend, Sean, I started to explain what I had done in the class. And then something very strange happened as I was talking to him. I was telling him all the things I've just told you in the audience. And as I was telling him about, you know, specifically that so many people, you know, have this fantasy about what energy is and a focus on the energetic. And I do. I mean, the energetic is real. I mean, there's very much that's a true experience, you know, that we can have of a very non-subtle energy. I'm certainly our work with the Bushmen, you know, that's so pronounced, this type of exchange. But I said, I'm really becoming fascinated with this more subtle grounding that holds us, this relationship to gravity. And as I shared that with him, all of a sudden, my whole body was flooded with feeling. I was driving on my way to work and my eyes flushed with tears. And it was a very profound and again, a flooding and sensation of feeling throughout the body. And it was that type of gratitude that borders on grief. You know, it's both, but it's the gratitude that, yeah, brings a heavy gratitude, I guess, which is maybe a good metaphor since we're talking about gravity. And of course, we struggle with gravity, right? I mean, as we get older with things like arthritis and pains and movement, like gravity is also, in a sense, it's an old god. It's a force you can't negotiate with. I mean, you can only align to it. And anyway, yeah, so I was just very surprised with all of this feltness that came through. And so that in that moment, that I think that really is a kind of animistic expression that said, oh, no, gravity is a living thing and I have a living relationship to it. It's not just a force of physics. It is a living force in the world that shapes us. And in that way, I think we can think of it as an old god or a fierce god or a wild god. You know, it's something very deep that literally shapes the alignment of everything in the universe. That's a powerful thing. And yet it is an everyday and mundane thing. So anyway, that is my story for you of standing, walking, gravity, healing, the way it shapes us.
Such a beautiful story. I'm moved hearing it even again for the second time here in just a little while. The recognition of something that is so easy to take for granted. You know, it's similar, you know, to the idea that, you know, what does a fish think of water, right? It's not really aware of water in the way that we are because we don't know what they're thinking, but, you know, it's the things that are so shaping us that we no longer think of them and they go out of our consciousness. And yet, you know, when you tune into the subtlety, which is not so subtle, as you said, you know, mm-hmm. the earth is being held in position around the sun because of it, you know, it's no small thing, but yet we completely take it for granted. And the value of tuning into these simple truths And, you know, that's what fox walking is about. Because as you said, I relived all the memories of my children learning to walk. And they literally lean forward before they take that first step, right?
That's it.
And then
I love where they have so much momentum, they don't know how to stop, right?
Yeah,
they're looking
exactly.
for a wall for a parent to run into, right? Because they're like, I don't know how to put the brakes on today. Yeah.
Right. And that's where it begins. And then it's like, in, you know, modern times, you know, that's pretty much it. That's it. That's your walking. That's, you learn to do it like that. And then you do it your whole life. And Sarah was recently walking through an airport and she was subtly video recording people's feet walking. And all the people in the airport were walking in that way. They've just gotten really good at it, right? But they're basically in the controlled fall. And then she video recorded her own feet and you could see she was fox walking. You know, she was holding her center of gravity over her hips and her feet were going out, touching the ground and almost like pulling. You know, it's like the ball of your foot lands, rolls down from the outside to the inside and it kind of grips the ground and pulls you forward, you know, and it's a very different look. And I think when you're learning to do that, it's very befuddling for people. You know, they don't quite know how to think about it. And I always tell people, well, stop thinking about what your feet are doing and instead put your peripheral vision on, what my mentor Tom calls wide angle vision. Look at the horizon and notice if the horizon is bouncing up and down as you're walking, right?
Yeah.
In your peripheral vision. And if it's bouncing up and down, just bend your knees a little bit and get a little shorter. You know, if I'm 5'9" and a half, well, then I'm suddenly 5'8" and a half. So it's not a huge shift of my height, but it's like you're crouching a little bit, but not uncomfortably. You get used to it. And head, shoulders, over hips, you know, you're now able to glide. And I love to just tell people, imagine you have an aluminum tray, a big circular aluminum tray, and it's covered with long stem glasses that are very fragile, really fancy glasses. And they're all filled to the top with these fancy cordials, and they're very expensive. And you have to deliver them to the table where the customers have ordered them, and they're very expensive, so you cannot spill them, right? And then pretend you're doing that and watch the horizon, and you'll notice that you can glide. You know, you literally can do that without spilling anything. But it's like when you come into relationship with the consciousness of this awareness of gravity and the recognition that I was in a controlled fall my whole life as I walked, I never stopped to think there's another way to do this. And now I'm going to become conscious of where my center of gravity is. And when you tune into that, and you turn on your peripheral vision at the same time, there's a notable shift in your state of consciousness and awareness. It's deeply relaxing. It causes all of the little anxieties to drop away, and your awareness turns on in a different way, and you suddenly notice things that you didn't notice before. And I think it's because when you're in the controlled fall style of walking, your head is bouncing with every step, and that's causing your peripheral vision to get a lot of noise, you know, a lot of information that doesn't have any meaning. But as soon as things stop bouncing, now you pick up the movement over here and you notice a little flick and you look and there's a deer's ear flicking at a fly and the deer was in the shade of the tree and you would never have noticed it. You would have just walked right by it, you know? So it's like this consciousness of our subtle relationship with gravity and, you know, moving in a graceful way suddenly causes us to awaken to something, you know? And I kind of felt like your story really represented that for me, that sense of gratitude bordering on grief, and that deep sense of grace almost, right?
It's interesting too, as you talk, it's evoking some other thoughts. Like one of the practices I do in my life for my own health is a type of standing practice, a type of motion, like a outwardly motionless practice where we're not walking, but again, aligning and standing. And a friend of mine, Corey Hess, he was a Rinzai Buddhist monk, Zen monk in Japan for a number of years, and had a Kensho Satori enlightenment experience while he was there with his teacher, a master, a Roshi named Harada Roshi. And now for Corey is part of his expression of that experience and of that, you know, greater connection to the wholeness of life. He teaches a movement class. And there's different elements, but one element is a kind of standing. It's a type of Chinese Qigong practice called Jamjong. But it's not a motion practice. You're standing in, not rigidly, but still in a stillness, in a stance. Wuji is just a stance with your arms at the side. The classic one is kind of like you're hugging a tree with the arms circular at heart level. There's different stances that can come out. But it, again, it's a letting go. It's not a holding. It's not a fighting gravity. That's what we tend to do when we start it. But it's the, is there something else holding you up other than your muscles? Is, you know, is there a way to find and surrender to the gravity that you're not fighting, that you can be filled with a sense of buoyancy in the face of gravity? And here's another practice that's actually from an osteopath that they called non-directed body movement or just standing. They're kind of awkward names. But in that one, we're literally just standing and finding a place of, again, letting go to gravity such that the body can begin to unwind, you know, all of its holdings, that it can be filled with the kind of the tides and the movement of life. And so all of a sudden, the notion of buoyancy or tides come into play. And it reminded me, like you said, of going down an inch, like in the practice, in the standing in the stance of Wuji, you know, we'll unlock the knees, go down an inch. You know, the Chinese say, like, if you want to go up, you need to go down. You know, there's this sort of paradoxical direction that happens. And again, we're looking for an alignment where is the position of the foot? You know, as we come forward towards the balls of the foot, as we come through the pelvis, as we drop the center down, as we fill out the spine, not just the belly, but we fill out the back of the spine. And in some ways, it becomes bear-like, the posture. You know, it starts to round. And again, we're looking for this place of neutral in relationship to gravity, aligned, honoring it, but finding this neutrality. And that evoked, you know, when you were talking about the fox walk, is it evoked, oh yeah, that's what we do in our not walking in this practice. And then we find our gaze on the horizon. And then, like you said, that when you're walking in fox walks, maybe you'll see a deer's ear twitch. But in this, of course, it's for our internal perception or introception. We drop into this position and this relationship and, oh, I can feel the body opening in this way. I can see this calling. I can see this aspect of the body I would never have seen before, you know, if I was just too jerky in it all, you know, or too rigid. Again, for me, part of my life for the last number of years has been barefoot trail running. And again, when you all of a sudden have no protection and you can't bring a flat floor with you onto the ground, now the ground, again, is an expression, a textural expression of gravity. You have to conform to it, right? You have to small strides, long strides, the notion you can't slam your heels in like you can with padded shoes. You have midfoot strikes, forefoot strikes. And again, this sort of way that, and running becomes different. So rather than, you know, reaching our legs out and kind of stretching our way through the landscape in some awkward way, again, the feeling is like literally you're pulling your way through the landscape, you know, that the foot is grabbing and pulling you forward into that controlled fall. So I love barefoot walking, barefoot running on natural surface. And again, the neurology that comes alive, because everything becomes, you have to sense every motion, because it's important, because if you don't, you'll stub your toe on a root quite quickly, you know, or step on a rock. And so it brings this kind of aliveness. And the last thing that sort of came up in my mind as we're sharing here is that some ways too, like we look to how we can kind of free ourselves from the tyranny of gravity, and that's buoyancy. You know, for when we go swimming, I love when you look at these free divers that go down to the buoyantly neutral territories under the water to just feel the freedom of the neutrality of buoyancy. It's probably a reminiscing of us in the womb, like living in a fluid environment, or how we can even, you know, how we can, either we're going into the air to try to find a way to soar, or into the water to find a way to float, you know, and to find the freedom that buoyancy gives us, that can we find a freedom from gravity in a given moment. And one last practice, like, you know, we're talking about the sort of the standing up, but it becomes very fascinating. You know, we have to go back to the infant, back on the ground in a horizontal way, when that was our relationship to gravity. to start to twist and turn and move in the horizontal, on the floor, you know, exploring the landscape, and the topology of a room there. And again, that just again gives us a sense that, oh, we can have so many different kinds of relationship to gravity. Or what do we do when we have the support of somebody else holding us to allow us to be in positions, again, with gravity that we could never do on our own because we'd fall over. But with that support, that we can be held, you know, in places that maybe our body has never been in, and let us feel the effect of gravity anew. And I think, you know, that that becomes a part of the nature of a hands-on healing, right? That we can, the nature of support, what we can't do by ourselves, but what we could do with others. I remember one time I was air surfed at a, it was at a contact improv group, but they, the crowd surfed. I got put up in, and I had 100 hands holding me and moving me, you know, above the crowd. And what a sense of being able to, you know, to have a relationship to gravity I could never have without those 100 hands. It was a remarkable feeling. Anyway, oh, wow. These are all just tangential notions popping into my head. And most of my conversation, as you know, John, is nonlinear in these ways. but this is, you know, what's been evoked just by that first invitation to speak to our controlled falling as we walk. So for whatever that's worth, there you go.
I love it, Bill. And that's gravity in motion. And that's the theme of the month. And I loved that. You know, your friend had a synchronicity, a dream of you teaching walking, and you were teaching walking the week before, and we're teaching walking this month. And yeah, it's really fun. If people were interested in finding you, is there a place they might be able to find you?
I wish there was. I have a website that's kind of somewhat dysfunctional. I'll probably be renewing it. It's complexitymedicine.org. Complexity medicine is one word. But I think at this point, the easiest is if anybody was interested in your community to reach out. It's just feel free to, you know, direct them to me directly, and happy to have a broader conversation on any of these things, and, you know, particularly around interests in healing, or as you know, we share a deep love of the Bushmen and their approach to healing. And I would say that's kind of my orientation, like, a, you know, what is the nature of the deeply ecstatic? What is the nature of the cathartic? What is the nature of these kind of radical movement of radical spirit? As my teacher Brad Keeney often mentions, it's, you know, the idea of the non-subtle energy of things rather than the subtle. You know, I really do love these expressions and treasure my relationships with the people, you know, that have helped to open that up inside. So I really am open to conversations anytime if anybody has a sincere interest. So yeah, you know, feel free to if they reach out to you to send, you know, to share my contact with them, and happy to have a conversation.
Wonderful. Well, thanks very much, Dr. Bill. And until next time, I think you'll all be a little more conscious of walking.
Thanks, John. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.